This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
On the Breakfast Grill today is Darren McLean. He's the group director of Sanderson Group, an Australian-based company, actually now Malaysian-based, that designs and constructs theme parks with award-winning theme parks like the Warner Brothers Movie World in the Gold Coast, as well as Universal Studios in Singapore. It hopes to provide turnkey solutions for theme parks. So, good morning, Darren. Welcome to the show. We've heard of this phrase, if you build, they will come. Is this always true for theme parks?
It is for high-quality theme parks, absolutely.
Yeah. And what are the considerations that are involved in the design of theme parks?
Well, naturally, there's a lot of considerations. I think these days the market is looking for brands and characters that it recognises from television or from movies. Mm-hmm. It's looking for something that's affordable and something that's inclusive of the whole family, of all age groups.
So definitely something out of popular culture rather than something that is internally developed.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay. We hear of various cost figures for theme parks, from the tens of millions of dollars to hundreds of millions and even maybe more. What goes into thinking of how much is spent on construction costs?
That's a very good question. I think there's a lot of factors to consider, but first and foremost, you need to look at the available market and what their spending power is, how many people can be captured, and how much can they spend on their total visit.
Yes. Is there a minimum size of how big a theme park should be before it becomes viable?
There's not. Theme parks come in all shapes and sizes, and there's obviously space considerations and quantity of entertainment calculations that we do when designing parks to make sure that when people come in, they get value for money. That's really what it boils down to, is how much are they spending and what is their value for money.
Give us an idea of what the size of the market is. We hear of theme parks all over the region. What is the build pipeline over the next few years?
Well, it's certainly increasing rapidly in Asia. That's why Sanderson Group is really centralizing itself in Asia, and particularly Southeast Asia. To give you an idea of the market, the top 20 theme parks in Asia attracted 116 million visitors last year in 2013. Mm-hmm. So for the top 20 parks, their attendance is close to 6 million people on average.
Per park.
Per park, yeah. And that number grew by 7.5% last year, and it's probably going to grow by another 7 to 10% this year. And it's got a lot to do with the middle income earners in the emerging markets and their availability to spend their income on entertainment.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that Sanderson has relocated to Malaysia from Australia recently. What is the reason for doing that?
Yes, we did. In 2011, we moved our headquarters from the Gold Coast, our hometown in Australia, to Kuala Lumpur. We felt it was important to be more geographically central for our clients and for us to be able to access our projects easier. We can take advantage of the great incentives that the Malaysian government, particularly MIDA, offer to MNCs when they set up their headquarters in Malaysia.
And what are some of these incentives?
Well, there's a 10-year tax-free status for MNCs who get the OHQ approval from MIDA, mm-hmm. and the expatriates who move to Malaysia as part of the HQs have tax breaks as well. Mm-hmm. But there's also a great pool of talent in Malaysia at very affordable prices. There's, you know, excellent universities that produce the quantity surveyors and project managers and architects that we need.
Mm-hmm. And what is the do you find that you've obtained a strategic? Obviously, you have from a location viewpoint. You are located strategically right in the middle of Asia Pacific. How have you done against your competitors, and who are your competitors?
A lot of our competitors come out of the USA. Not many come from Australia. And we've been able to position ourselves strategically, geographically by being here in person, which is a big advantage over our American competitors. And we've developed a full range of services for our clients so we can really hold their hand and take them through the entire development process from concept planning, economic planning, the entire design process and the entire construction process right through to establishing the operations and opening a park. So in that sense, we don't have any competition. There's no other company that offers that full range of services.
So what is the value of your pipeline right now for the shift from Australia to Malaysia? How much deal pipeline have you achieved here?
Currently, we have over 30 projects underway in 7 countries. The value of those projects is somewhere around $110 million, and that includes some design consultancy projects, some construction projects, and some projects where we're actually developing ourselves, such as our new movie animation park studios in Ipoh,
which we want to talk about later.
I'd love to talk about that later.
much more excited
about that one.
But you know, this $100 million is US dollars, right? Is it
US dollars?
$100 million in your pipeline, that doesn't sound consistent with the kind of huge project announcements that we hear of coming from everywhere around the region, you know, from China right down to Singapore and even some of the far-flung emerging markets. Yet we're talking about hundreds of millions of announced developments around the region. Why is your pipeline so small compared to that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think a lot of the announcements are projects that did not come to fruition, and a lot of our project pipeline is in the role of a consultant, where our contract values are not in the tens or hundreds of millions, but we take the role of an advisor for our clients as designers, as feasibility consultants, as project managers, particularly in countries where there's a high construction risk for us, like China. We don't do construction work currently.
Okay. You know, there is this impression about theme parks. It's always I may be a wet blanket in saying this, but it's always the same rides, you know, your roller coasters and your Ferris wheels and so on, dressed up in different characters. Is that a fair thing to say? Is it as simple as that, or is there more?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to it, particularly Sanderson Group tries to bring a point of difference to the attractions in the parks that we design, and the industry is moving away from just having mechanical rides that are dressed in bright colours or you know, recognisable characters. I think the industry is moving a lot more towards interactive content, media-based content, shows, walkthrough attractions, stuff that would be different every time a guest comes back to the park. So what your statement is probably true for you know, parks historically, and there are some parks that are really more about just getting on a ride and enjoying a ride, but we're certainly not moving in that direction.
On the Breakfast Grill today is Darren McLean, Executive Director of the Sanderson Group. Up next, we will talk about a certain theme park development coming up in Perak. Darren McLean, Executive Director of the Sanderson Group, which is an integrated theme park solutions provider, is on the Breakfast Grill this morning. Darren, we've heard a lot about the concept of integrated resorts that was first mooted in Singapore, but also to a limited extent in places like Genting in Malaysia, where a casino is complemented by entertainment and work elements. At the conceptual level, are theme parks a profitable unit on its own, or does it have a secondary role to play in such concepts?
Yes, Julian, I think theme parks are certainly profitable business units in their own right, if managed properly. And most of the theme parks in Malaysia, large and small, are running profitably. They're high cash-generating businesses. And I think there's a misconception that theme parks die over a period of time. As I said, most of the theme parks in Malaysia, including all of the parks that people would recognize, are all running very profitably.
Mm-hmm. And there are also policy factors involved as well. For example, tourism would be a major pool for theme parks. And in that vein, you're involved in the Movie Animation Park Studio, or MAPS, that will cost about 400 million ringgit to be established in Perak. DreamWorks, founded by Steven Spielberg, among others, is part of this. Tell us more about this.
Yes, the project in Ipoh is called Movie Animation Park Studios, or MAPS for short. It is an animation-based theme park, which is the first animation-based theme park in the world. And the main content is DreamWorks Animation from the USA. So we will be building an entire area called the DreamWorks Experience that has many of the DreamWorks characters and movies inside that zone. And we're very excited to be bringing that content to Ipoh and Malaysia.
Tell us a little bit of what are some of these characters.
Okay, well, we have Mr. Peabody and Sherman, which was a hit movie in March and April of this year. We have The Croods, that was a hit movie from last year. We have a family favorite, which is Casper the Ghost. We have Megamind, which is a very funny movie from a few years back. And we have other IP from DreamWorks that will be introduced in the coming years as future attractions after the park opens.
Okay, it certainly sounds like a crowd pooler. And it will be developed, owned, and managed by a joint venture company called Animation Theme Parks in Neram Berhad, which is a JV company owned by Sanderson, as well as the Perak Corporation Berhad, which is the state of Perak's development body. Is this a shift from your normal operations that you used to be involved in design and construction, and now you've gone into ownership?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's a natural progression for our company. After designing and building parks for 25 years, we certainly want to move up the value chain and take a stake in owning and operating the parks for many reasons. But we're very excited because this is the first time we've done it. So it's something that we're all very passionate about at Sanderson mm-hmm. Group, and we're looking forward to taking an ongoing role after the park opens.
What do you think are some of the challenges you would face from this change, this shift in your way of doing things?
Well, we certainly need to increase our resources in operations. We're bringing in a lot of talent over the next 18 months from mm-hmm. both overseas and Malaysia to operate the park. So that will be a learning curve for us. And just generally bringing a park to Malaysians that is different, that has a strategic advantage over the other parks that people recognize, mm-hmm. something that is dynamic and fresh and different each time people come back.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the economics of the park. What kind of cut would you give to DreamWorks? Is there some annual fee?
There's an annual licensing fee, which is a seven-figure fee, plus royalties on all of the food and beverage and retail merchandise and sponsorships that carry the DreamWorks name.
So when would you break even? What kind of visitor arrivals are you expecting?
In the first year of operation, we're expecting 1.4 million visitors. We expect to break even somewhere around the fifth to sixth year, which is generally recognized as an acceptable return on investment for our industry.
And what would a visitor have to pay for entry?
Well, we're still finalizing the actual ticket prices. But in terms of average per capita spend, if we look at how much, for example, a family of four would pay to come in and enjoy an entire day at the park, including food and beverage and their additional spending, we're looking at around 500 ringgit for a family of four.
For a family of four?
Yeah.
Okay, so if we work an per head average out of that, that's calculation seems to be a lot cheaper than Universal Studios in Singapore,
which you
designed and constructed as well.
That's right.
Do you think that Malaysia would become a theme park focused type of economy? I mean, a lot of it can shift to Malaysia because of the attractive economics, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the reason we're here, and that's the reason we're developing our first park here. Is we believe the fundamentals in Malaysia for tourism growth, for cost of developing parks is right at the moment, and there's land supply at reasonable prices. Theme parks take up a lot of land, And compared to neighbouring countries, Malaysia's got huge advantages for developing parks, so much so that it will become a theme park cluster, much like Orlando, Los Angeles, Gold Coast. These places are known for not just one major park, but a cluster of parks. We're quite confident that Malaysia will be a theme park cluster in the next 5 to 10 years.
So I understand this is also a first for DreamWorks to set up a theme park. And why did they choose Malaysia and for that matter, Perak?
Well, firstly, they have a lot of confidence in the companies that are developing the park. They know Sanderson Group and they have confidence in our ability to deliver a park to their standard. They're very involved in the entire development process. And also our partners, Perak Corporation, Berhad, who are our local partner in Perak. And the location at Ipoh, which is right on the north-south highway in Meru Raya, is fantastic. We have the visibility of 40,000 cars per day passing our site. We're amongst a master-planned township with all the supporting infrastructure and facilities around it. And DreamWorks have visited the site several times, and they, in a nutshell, have faith in the people who are developing it and have faith in the location that we've selected.
Do you often work with state-related entities?
Not often. We do, but we work with private developers a lot. The state plays a large role in developing as a stakeholder in the parks for approvals, for incentives, that type of thing. But I would say most of our clients are actually private developers.
Okay. So as far as the Perak state is concerned, have they worked any KPIs into their agreement with you? For instance, what are the tourism targets you have to achieve?
There's no formal KPIs, but we talk about it a lot. And they obviously see the advantage in growing Perak tourism as a whole, as a spin-off from having a major international theme park in Ipoh.
Okay. You have another project with DA Land as well that has, if my numbers are right, a development value of about 300 million ringgit, and this is to build a water theme park. Can a country have too many theme parks?
That's a good question. As I mentioned before, I think Malaysia has potential for several major theme parks in all of the major tourist destinations, right from Johor through to Malacca, Ipoh, Langkawi, Penang. All of these destinations deserve to have international theme parks and can support international theme parks. So I think Malaysia's got a long way to go before it would be considered a mature theme park market or a saturated theme park market. So I think there's a lot more parks that could be supported by the market, particularly if Malaysia's going to achieve the tourism growth that is targeted by the government, by the Ministry of Tourism. It's not going to achieve those numbers unless it has better tourism infrastructure, which includes theme parks.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this actually takes away from the kind of ecotourism potential that Malaysia can offer? Because it kind of distracts the focus of the state governments or even the federal government in terms of developing the ecotourism potential. What's your thinking on that?
I think it's complementary. I think Malaysia is a world-class ecotourism destination, and it's probably a lot more mature in that sense than the theme park destination. But they go hand in hand. Tourists are not going to decide not to go to an ecotourism destination if they go to a theme park. They'll probably go to both.
And in terms of the environmental impact, what is the current thinking behind the carbon footprint of theme parks? And have you incorporated these principles into any of your construction and design?
To be honest, not really. I mean, they don't take up a huge footprint compared to ecotourism attractions, which take up hundreds of acres. Theme parks are built on, 50 acres, 100 acres, and they're quite dense developments. So we haven't taken green initiatives into our theme parks to date. But having said that, we're not negligent of being energy efficient and green, but it's not the driving consideration when we're designing parks. We're trying to build in entertainment and family fun first and foremost.
There's also 25% entertainment tax that is slapped on ticket prices. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. I think it's, you know, a negative mark against foreign direct investment in entertainment and theme parks. I think it's something that needs to be reconsidered and lobbied, because it certainly will either increase the cost of going to theme parks, or it will decrease the attendance, because less people will be able to afford to go. And for companies like us, it lowers the margin, the operating margin. So we would certainly like to think that the state governments will hear us out and offer some type of exemption or reduction in that entertainment tax. But it was only introduced earlier this year for theme parks. So the industry is getting together to try to lobby for a reduction or an exemption.
That would certainly have an impact on your pricing, wouldn't it? You would have to charge a lot more if that tax was imposed.
That's right. It has a huge impact, and it can't be considered as a cost on top of the entry ticket, because the visitors only look at how much they have to spend for a ticket. And in actual fact, the operator has to absorb that into their operating costs, as opposed to the visitors paying 25% more. So it definitely affects the margin and the attendance at theme parks.
Your relocation from Australia to Malaysia, this part of the world, suggests that you have some kind of belief in the potential of the emerging markets. Are there differences in design considerations between emerging and developed markets? How do you work income thresholds and affordability factors into your design?
Yes, there certainly is differences in emerging countries where income levels are lower. We need to look at what the spending power is for the residents and how much is the appropriate capital expenditure on the park. So, for example, it's not viable to spend the same amount building a park in Vietnam as it would be building a park in Hong Kong, because of the obvious difference in spending power of the market. There's huge potential for high attendance in those parks, and we see a lot of parks in emerging markets attracting millions and millions of visitors, but certainly they pay less per capita.
So this obviously affects the complexity of rides, because cost will become a factor.
Yes, it does, yeah. Yeah, and that's all part of our economic planning process, is to look at what the appropriate capital expenditure is and how you're going to spread that over the attraction. So we need to look at lower cost attractions and scaling down the costs of the attractions.
Thank you. That was Darren McLean, Group Executive Director of Sanderson Group, the company that moved from Australia to Malaysia, and they are involved in an integrated solutions provider for theme parks. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.